morning and welcome everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board held on March 22nd, 2011. We want to welcome all of you who have joined us in person or who are listening on this webcast. Today the board will hear a report from the Office of its Chief Auditor on the results of the information gathering stage of the board's initiative consider improvements to the auditor's reporting model. Before we proceed with the agenda, I want to note for the record that all board members are present. The first and only order of business is a staff presentation on the Office of Chief Auditor's outreach about potential changes to the auditor's reporting model. The auditor's reporting model is the primary means by which the auditor communicates with investors and other users of audited financial statements, and yet it has not been significantly modified since the 1930s. Over the years, as many of you know, several committees and groups such as the Cohen Commission, the Treadway Commission, the American Assembly have taken up this issue of what the report is, what it should be, what it says about what auditors do, and whether there should be improvements or changes to be made. And that has been a continuing exercise since almost the beginning, but as we have lived through the recent financial crises, terms, nomenclature such as a brittle illusion, expectations gap, these have entered our vocabulary, and they are clear danger signs to us as a financial community that we should think about this and take it up, treat it seriously. Most recently, the Treasury Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession recommended that this board undertake a standard-setting project to consider improvements to the auditor's reporting model. Now, that Treasury Advisory Committee report specifically recommended that as part of what we did, as part of that initiative, this board should consult with, quote, investors, other financial statement users, auditing firms, public companies, academics, and others. And that is exactly what we've done. And we're here today to receive a report on that outreach and to discuss the next steps in this important project. I personally think it's one of the most important projects that the board can take up and will take up. And with that, I want to turn it over to our chief auditor, Mr. Martin Bauman.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. We're pleased this morning to discuss our outreach efforts to investors and others about potential changes in the auditor's reporting model. Joining me in the presentation today is Jennifer Rand, our Deputy Division Director and Deputy Chief Auditor. And I'd also like to recognize the hard work of the other members of our team who have been so critical to this effort, and they are Jessica Watts, Dan Mutzig, and Deanne Jules. I'd also like to thank them in advance for the hard work that I know is still in front of them as we move towards a planned concept release, open meeting roundtable discussion, and proposed standard. I'd also like to thank the many individuals we spoke to during our outreach. Many of them spent over a half day with us discussing their views of the current auditor's report and how the report could be changed to provide greater transparency to investors. Because of that outreach, we are much better informed about the areas of change where investors seek additional information, how those changes should be reflected in the report, and possible challenges in doing so. Our objectives for today's open meeting with the board are to describe the nature and extent of the Office of the Chief Auditor's outreach regarding the auditor's reporting model and the input received on that outreach, and secondly, to seek the board members' views on the input received from the outreach and any other topics or areas to further explore as my staff works towards developing a concept release. In the board's October 2010 standing advisory group meeting, the Office of the Chief Auditor discussed the importance of its standard-setting initiative on the auditor's reporting model. This initiative includes considering whether improvements should be made to the standard auditor's report. The board's standing advisory group, its investor advisory group, and the Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession, or ACAP, convened by the U.S. Department of Treasury, all recommended that the PCAOB consider whether such improvements should be made to the standard auditor's report, and to consult with investors and others in the financial reporting supply chain to obtain their input on this topic. Consistent with these recommendations, from October 2010 through March 2011, my office conducted in-person meetings and held conference calls with over 80 individuals consisting of investors, preparers, audit committee members, auditors, regulators and other standard setters, and academia. The participants represented a diverse group of organizations and companies, domestic and international, as well as small, medium, and very large. The interactive dialogue among the outreach participants provided us with deep insight into the areas of potential changes in the auditor's report, how those changes could be presented, as well as the benefits and challenges of doing so. Investors have long indicated that they are the auditor's customer, and therefore the auditor's responsibility is to report to the investor in a manner which meets the investor's needs. Investors are seeking more useful and relevant information from the auditor beyond the current pass-fail auditor report. Let me quote a simple observation made by the Cohen Commission when it examined the auditor's report in 1978, some 33 years ago. Quote, "For the largest corporations in the country, an audit may involve scores of auditors and tens of thousands of hours of work for which the client may pay millions of dollars. Nevertheless, the auditor's standard report compresses that considerable expenditure of skilled effort into relatively few words and paragraphs." Close quote. Although the Cohen Commission highlighted that the communication between the auditor and users of the audit report was unsatisfactory, most of the Commission's recommendations were not implemented. Investors recognize that the audit is a valuable process that requires extensive time, effort, and audit judgment. The main point is that investors are seeking a more innovative product from the auditor. In short, investors see the audit report as the product of the audit for which they are paying, and in general note that that product hasn't changed in any substantive way over the last 100 years. This view is also consistent with the views expressed in the recent presentation by the working task force of the board's investor advisory group. At the last IAG meeting, the board heard a presentation from some of the group's members about a survey they conducted to solicit views regarding changes to the auditor's report. The group surveyed investors in investment banks, mutual funds, pension funds, hedge funds, and others. Both the IAG survey and our outreach underscore that investors believe they need more information from the auditor regarding the auditor's views on audit risk, management's judgments and estimates, and the quality of management's accounting policies. Investors have indicated that this information would be valuable in informing their investment decisions. As part of our outreach activities, we explored the reasons driving investors' request for changes in the auditor's report. The essence of the issue is as follows. The current auditor's report states that the financial statements are fairly presented or not. The binary yes-no on-off report. Auditing standards allow for circumstances where the auditor can provide emphasis of matters. However, this option is rarely used by the auditor. A chief investment officer in a mutual fund who participated in the IAG survey said that, quote, "The audit report is largely boilerplate and only provides meaningful information in extreme circumstances, usually around going concern issues," close quote. Investors have also expressed that they are tired of surprises. They believe that if they had a better understanding of some of the types of matters that auditors discuss with audit committees about audit risks and how they dealt with those audit risks, or the auditor's views on management's judgments and estimates, then these investors might have a better idea of how to anticipate certain events or issues, may know where to do more research as part of their investment analysis, or could use this additional information as part of their investment valuation process. Investors cite the recent financial crisis as an example of where an expanded auditor's report may have been extremely helpful. Investors indicated that if the audit report included a discussion of the most significant judgments in the financial statements and the areas in the auditor's view of greatest risk, investors would have been able to probe further into matters such as complex valuation models, concentrations of credit risk, measurement uncertainty in the allowance for loan losses, and the difficult decisions to consolidate or leave off the balance sheet various entities and potential liabilities. Other factors driving the need for change or improvements in the auditor's report include the nature of business becoming more global and complex, and the nature of accounting rules moving towards more principles-based standards, resulting in even more need for management judgment and estimates in the preparation of financial statements. The mission of the PCAOB is to oversee the audits of public companies in order to protect the interests of investors and further the public interest in the preparation of informative, accurate, and independent audit reports. We recognize there are many different views on whether changes should be made to the auditor's report, and if so, what changes should be made. Throughout this process, we have aimed to be responsive to investors while being mindful that any potential changes or improvements should enhance or at least preserve audit quality. We also recognize that some of the potential areas of consideration that you will hear today may require SEC or FASB collaboration and their rulemaking, depending on who should provide additional information for investors, that is, auditors through their audit report, management through improved financial statement disclosures, or audit committees through expanded audit committee reporting. We also recognize that it behooves us to explore potential challenges to the auditor's reporting model that were noted by preparers, audit committee members, and auditors. With that, let me now turn the discussion over to Jennifer Rand to provide a further discussion regarding the outreach and results. I'll then describe later possible changes to the auditor's reporting model. Jennifer?
Thank you, Marty. Regarding the nature and extent of OCE's outreach efforts, our focus on the outreach was primarily on improving the current standard auditor's report, considering the auditor's responsibilities today. In our discussions, it did lead to some areas where auditors could provide greater assurance in certain areas, but principally our focus was on the current auditor's report and the auditor's current responsibilities. Before we began our outreach, we reviewed numerous amounts of information to help inform the types of questions we should ask in our outreach. We reviewed academic research, surveys, and other publications to inform the structure and nature of our outreach efforts. And we also considered the input and advice of our standing advisory group and the investor advisory group, as well as activities of other standard setters and regulators. As Marty mentioned, our outreach consisted of in-person meetings and conference calls with more than 80 individuals, several of which are with large constituency groups. Our first area of focus was to meet with investors. We wanted to hear from them first, since they're the group we've been hearing are calling for change, and that is where the PCOB's mission is directed. In our meetings with investors, we met with individuals who were money managers, asset management funds, with pension funds, and wealth management funds. We also met with individuals from organizations that represent institutional investors, investor advocates, buy and sell side analysts from some of the largest investment firms, and analysts from some of the largest credit rating agencies. Our next area of focus after meeting with investors and hearing their views was to obtain views from preparers, audit committees, and auditors. Participants in our preparer discussions included representatives from several Fortune 50 companies, Fortune 500 companies, and some smaller public companies. Participants in our audit committee discussions included representatives from small non-accelerated filers to Fortune 50 companies. And our participants in our auditor discussions included leaders from large and small accounting firms who audit both accelerated and non-accelerated filers. We also obtained the perspectives of individuals who previously held leadership roles in the accounting profession or at regulatory organizations. Some of these individuals have contributed to several discussions and commissions that have resulted in recommendations regarding the auditor's report, such as the American Assembly, the Cohen Commission, Panel on Audit Effectiveness, and ACAP. In our outreach, we sought the participants' views in four key areas, probing deeply into each of them. The first area is whether changes or improvements were needed to the auditor's report, and if so, what type of changes or improvements were needed. The second area, which types of changes or improvements were most important, and how the changes or improvements would be valuable to them. Third, what were their preferences regarding the current pass-fail model and standard auditor's report? We've heard a lot of concern from investors that's not sufficient, and we want to understand if there's any value behind the current pass-fail and auditors and the reporting today. And then finally, what were their views regarding the format of the audit report? If there is some type of additional information, how would that be presented in the report itself? Let me now turn to a discussion of the views we obtained from the various participants from our recent outreach, starting with investors. Investors, as Marty mentioned, expressed a desire to obtain more information from the auditor and the auditor's report in a number of areas, which I will summarize into five main groups. The first is investors are interested in the audit or what the auditor did. Information in this category includes information about the risks identified by the auditor, materiality, engagement statistics, and independence. The second area investors are interested in from the auditor are the auditor's views on the company's financial statements or what the auditor found in performing the audit. This includes auditor's views on management's judgments and estimates, accounting policies, and difficult or contentious issues. The third area investors are seeking are clarifications in the language in the standard auditor's report, such as the auditor's responsibility for fraud. The report doesn't mention the auditor's responsibility for fraud today, but auditors have a responsibility to plan and perform in an audit to detect whether there's a material misstatement, whether due to error or fraud. Another is the meaning of reasonable assurance. Investors are looking for clarification on that, such as that it's not absolute assurance, but it's a very high level of assurance. And also the auditor's responsibility for disclosures. That responsibility isn't specifically mentioned, although the financial statements includes the disclosures, and investors think adding disclosures might be helpful. The fourth main area is seeking clarity or enhanced responsibility for information outside the financial statements, such as MD&A. Some investors said they would like some level of auditor assurance on MD&A and other information outside the financial statements, such as non-GAAP information and earnings releases. The auditor's responsibility today for other information is to read and consider whether such information or the manner in which it's presented is materially inconsistent with the financial statements or represent a material misstatement of fact. And the fifth area that investors have told us is they are interested in information in the report similar to key issues shared between the auditor and the audit committee. For instance, auditors communicate with the audit committee about a number of matters, including significant accounting policies, management judgments, and accounting estimates, among many others. We then met with preparers after hearing what investors are seeking. And overall, preparers generally do not agree that the auditor should provide additional information about the company's financial statements in the auditor's report, although they are somewhat less concerned about providing more information about the audit. So what the auditor did, about what the audit is about, preparers are more comfortable with than describing what the auditors are found or possibly presenting conflicting views, which was currently disclosed by management in the financial statements. Preparers' concerns include obscuring the responsibilities of management and the auditor, the auditor disclosing information that would be in addition to or in conflict with management's disclosures, and also their concern about the cost of additional auditor reporting, as well as the potential impact it could have on the overall relationship between the auditor and management. While preparers would prefer that any additional disclosures come from them, not from the auditors, preparers said they would be supportive of changes to the auditor's report that are fact-based and not subjective in nature. Changes that are fact-based that they are supportive of including are clarifying certain language in the auditor's report, such as responsibility for fraud and disclosures, clarifying in an auditor's report what an auditor does and does not represent, such as it provides an opinion on the financial statements, not the overall financial health of the company. Next is referring readers to significant areas in the financial statements so the auditor could include a list of areas that the auditor considered were significant and reference back to management's disclosures in the financial statements. Our next group is audit committee members' views. And overall, audit committee members' views are generally consistent with preparer views. Similar to preparers, they're supportive of changes that would clarify the language in the standard auditor's report, and the auditor highlighting management's critical policies by including references to where those policies are disclosed by management. However, audit committee members have expressed some concerns, and those include that additional auditor reporting may undermine the role of the audit committee, since management or the audit committee are in a better position to provide additional company information. And since audit committees have oversight responsibility for the audit on behalf of investors and meet regularly with management and investors, audit committee members have expressed that the investor may not have the appropriate context for audit committee communications. And finally, the possibility that auditor reporting on matters communicate to the audit committee might stifle that relationship between the auditor and the audit committee. We then met with auditors to get their perspective, and overall, auditors' views are generally consistent with preparers and audit committees' views regarding the fact that auditors should not be the original source for providing additional information about the company or the financial statements. They believe additional information should be fact-based or objective rather than subjective and should not obscure the roles of the audit committee, management, or the auditor. However, auditors are supportive of changes that clarify the language in the auditor's report. Additionally, some auditors have indicated the following as possible areas for change as it relates to the auditor's reporting model. The first is auditors could suggested they could potentially provide some type of auditor association with management's disclosures of a critical accounting estimates in the MD&A, since this information includes much of the types of information being requested by investors. The next area is if the audit committee report were to be expanded, auditors could explore providing some level of assurance on that type of report. This is similar to the type of reporting currently being considered by the UK Financial Reporting Council. And the next area auditors suggested there could be potential changes for the auditor's report to provide additional information with respect to audit scope and procedures, including a discussion of client-specific audit procedures performed. Auditors expressed some concerns regarding enhanced providing additional information in the auditor's report. The first area was concerns about auditor litigation, client confidentiality, and privacy concerns. The next is a time and effort to prepare, review, and provide enhanced auditor reporting within the current public filing deadlines. Auditors believe that a written auditor's discussion and analysis, for instance, or an AD&A, as some have called it, of the financial statements would consume considerable time, including firm-wide review for consistency, resulting in significant delay in the filing of an annual report. The next concern they expressed was the impact to the relationship with management and the audit committee as a result of the potential for additional public auditor reporting on the types of information being requested. That completes the summary of input that we received from the different groups we met with in our outreach efforts. Before I turn it to Marty, let me just touch briefly on our monitoring of developments of other standard setters and other regulators. Many other organizations around the globe, as I'm sure you're aware, are revisiting the auditor's reporting model. such as IOSCO, the European Commission, the Financial Reporting Council, and the IAASB, reflecting considerable attention focused on this matter. We've been monitoring these developments, and it has informed our outreach efforts, as it will also inform our continued work as we move forward on a concept release. Let me now turn it back over to Marty, while he would discuss areas of possible change to the report and possible challenges raised by outreach participants.
Thanks. Let me now conclude a summary discussion with some potential changes to the auditor's reporting model that we may explore on a concept release. I'll comment first on the existing audit report and then discuss supplemental auditor reporting. In general, investors believe that the audit report should continue to make it clear whether financial statements present fairly or not, and that the additional information they seek should be in a supplemental report to the primary audit report itself. With regard to the existing standard auditor's report, the options we've heard and could explore are as follows, and there's three of them. First, make no changes to the existing standard auditor's report. The second is the clarification in the existing standard auditor's report that Jennifer made reference to, clarifying certain terms such as reasonable assurance, the auditor's responsibility for fraud, the auditor's responsibility for other information in the financial statements. A third option for the current standard auditor's report would be really to shorten it to what's called an opinion-only report, a very short one-paragraph opinion-only. Some investors say that the opinion is the only valuable piece of information in that report and that the other information obscures the opinion. Based on our outreach, most investors seem to be supportive of the second option that was staying with largely the standard auditor's report and clarifying certain terms. However, the real issue where investors want to hear more is around this supplemental information to the standard auditor's report. And there are a few different options that we heard and discussed with auditors and others. The first and clearly the most commonly requested is for the auditor to provide an auditor's discussion and analysis, or AD&A, as it is being called, to supplement the standard auditor's report. This would have an appropriate language in it that would indicate that it's integral to the audit opinion on the financial statements taken as a whole, and that it doesn't represent separate assurance on individual accounts, balances, or transactions. And it would include some or all of the following. The first would be discuss the auditor's views regarding the audit, significant risks identified in the audit, and the auditor's responses to those risks, materiality considerations, and matters which could be thought to bear on auditor independence, examples like that. Or it could include the discussion of the auditor's views regarding the company's financial statements. As we've discussed earlier, that would include the auditor's views regarding management's judgments and estimates, the reasonableness of inputs and assumptions used in those estimates, and the quality, not just the acceptability, of the company's financial reporting policies. Or some investors would want to see discussions of both of those, the audit and the views on the financial statements. A second option is to expand or require the use of an emphasis paragraph. As noted earlier, an auditor, at its discretion, may emphasize in the auditor's report a matter regarding the financial statements. An example noted in the current auditing standard is for the use of an emphasis paragraph when an entity has a significant transaction with related parties. But in practice, emphasis paragraphs are rarely used. Recommendations we've heard have been to expand the list of illustrative examples where emphasis matters could be used, or require the use of emphasis paragraph and prescribe additional matters that should be or must be discussed in the emphasis report. The third model would be to provide an auditor discussion regarding critical judgments made in forming the auditor's opinion. This is similar to a current model that's being used in France. Provide a discussion of the auditor's assessment of the most significant accounting matters, judgments or estimates that affect the financial statement presentation, a high-level summary of the key audit procedures performed by the auditor in those areas, and reference to the related disclosures in the financial statements. The benefit seen of this model is that by the auditor in a special report making reference to information in the financial statements would likely improve the quality of work the auditor did in that area, and the reference being made by the auditor to those areas of the financial statements might likely improve the quality of disclosures in those critical areas of the financial statements. The fourth area of improvement is to require auditor association with MD&A, as was previously discussed. And the fifth was to require auditor association with an expanded audit committee report to investors, which would likely require some sort of SEC action, providing some level of assurance regarding the completeness and reasonableness of an expanded audit committee report is something the UK FRC has considered in a proposal. So these examples are not meant to represent all the potential alternatives recommended by investors. We just wanted to give you an idea of some of the areas of possible consideration in the upcoming release. Like with any change, there may be potential challenges or unintended consequences. Some of the areas indicated by outreach participants, and I'll summarize them briefly because Jennifer touched on them, are one, legal liability, confidentiality, and privacy considerations relative to the auditor, preparer, and audit committee. Secondly, possible confusion among investors and the marketplace if the auditor were to provide views that may compete with management views. Third, the potential time and cost of an audit related to the additional time required by the auditor, which could be significant in preparing and reviewing a narrative qualitative auditor's report. If investors believe this supplemental information will be valuable for investment decisions, auditors would need to take appropriate care, and our standards would need to ensure that appropriate care is taken in its preparation and review, like is done for management's MD&A. Another concern is that auditor reporting and information about the audit of the financial statements could inhibit communications among the parties. And lastly, the possibility that the auditor providing information about the company's financial statements could cause preparers to default to auditor preference on judgments or accounting policies or estimates, raising questions of auditor independence with respect to those financial statements. We plan to explore these possible challenges, among others, in the concept release. Let me now make brief concluding remarks. In summary, one thing is crystal clear from our outreach. There is considerable desire for change by investors for more and better information from the auditor about the audit and about the auditor's views of the financial statements. Others say that that information, if it's needed, could be provided through enhanced disclosures required by FASB or by enhanced audit committee report required by the SEC. The general investor response to those points is that those improvements would still be welcome, but investors still want to hear from the auditor about the auditor's views regarding the audit and auditor reporting. Our goal is to develop a concept release for the board's consideration at an open public meeting on or about June 30th. We would then hope to have a roundtable discussion among many participants in the fall and to move forward with proposed changes to the auditor's report in the first quarter of 2012. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, that concludes our presentation. We look forward to your comments and questions.
Well, thank you for the presentation, Marty. Before we go farther, I think each board member, each of my colleagues, is going to want to have a brief statement here to set their mindset out and set the stage. But I want to acknowledge your leadership as the chief auditor in carrying forward and developing this groundbreaking project. And I want to thank Jennifer Rand, your deputy, the whole project team, Jessica Watts, Dan Mutzig, and Diane Jules. This has required a great deal of hard work by a very small and highly expert team and the board, and I know the public appreciates it. A brief word about context. Embedded in this investor call for more information, I think, is clearly a call for investors, for auditors to serve investors in a way that they do not now see as being a direct or obvious part of their calling, and I think we've learned a lot about that already. Dealing with a private investor who has commissioned them or engaged them to go due diligence is one thing. but in terms of the report that you're dealing with and the complexities you're dealing with, there's a disagreement, or at least there's a disconnect in their role that permeates a lot of the conflict that and disagreement in the advice that Jennifer and you have relayed. And I think that this, to get to the bottom of this and to address this disagreement, I would like to start the analysis with the unique nature of the U.S. securities markets. And this is a matter of significance as well as context. I believe the markets here serve a purpose fundamentally different from others in the world. I'm risking the charge of exceptionalism here, but our markets do provide for a formation of capital and ownership by dispersing minority interests widely among millions of individual savers, dependent on the preservation and growth of their investments for their long-term plans, for their livelihood, for meeting the expenses of college, for their children, for assuring their retirement. Now, other markets do provide for dispersed ownership, but none of these markets are as deeply committed to the model as ours are. And that commitment has been something that has almost become a part of the American dream. It has paid off. And indeed, it's been so successful that more than half of the families in America rely on the equity markets and their affiliated investments they make for their livelihood. And this includes, of course, foreign investors. We have a $15 trillion capital market here, equity market. The next market is the Republic of China at $5 trillion. And ladies and gentlemen, if I'm to believe the economists' numbers for 2011, you've got to go a long way and you've got to do a lot of aggregating before you get any group of disparate countries and markets close to $15 trillion. This appeared yesterday in Mr. Barnier's remarks and in the Financial Times. Three-fourths of the economy in Europe is banking activity, 25%. Of the European economy consists of the activities in the financial markets, and Michel Barnier characterized this as the opposite of the United States, to take his accurate, I think, characterization. Our audit reports, accordingly, ought to reflect the needs of dispersed owners, and this, I think, is a starting principle rather than a conclusion. There are practical challenges in what we do. You have laid out the practical challenges. We must address these. We must think about what auditors are capable of producing for mass consumption within a short filing period and given the costs, burdens, and the implications for registrants and preparers. But the objective, I think, is that we should consider ways to create consistency of reporting. None of us have a good reaction to boilerplate. We all think of boilerplate as something that emerges in disclosure and in financial reporting to the disadvantage of understanding and transparency. But investors ought, after our project is complete, investors ought to be able to have greater assurance that differences in what companies say in their financial reporting reflect real differences in the quality of the financial reporting of the preparer that is subject to the audit, and not differences between the engagement partners or the time and attention that the engagement partners gave, and not differences in the kind of rigor and the standards that the firm and the engagement partners brought to the task. And that, I think, is something of a guiding principle, and it will go into a few questions that I've got. But first, a remark about process. Marty, you've done a wonderful job and described it to all of us of the extensive outreach you've done. And given the wide impact the project could have, I think it's very important that you've provided here the public insight into what the board's consideration of these issues is going to be. It's the first time, I understand, that the board has received a staff presentation on a major standard-setting project in public without a concrete proposal. And I think we're not going to take a vote today. There's nothing here to vote on. But as you've said, you intend to move to a concept release, and you have a schedule. And I guess in terms of the concept release, do you think, as a question, do you think that it will enable us to distinguish this concept of what the auditor did versus what the auditor found, the fact basis, opinion versus the prescriptive or prospective opinion. Do you think that we can frame questions that will enable us to put that in context and draw some meaningful distinctions so that auditors can get guidance and can know what they're supposed to do? How would you do that?
I think we can do that. Thank you for that question, Mr. Chairman. We've done, as you said, we've performed a lot of outreach, and we've also had the benefit of some outreach performed for the investor advisory group. So we've heard a lot about what investors feel they need. We've also heard the views of the others who are concerned, have expressed various concerns about it. I think we're on our way to exploring what potential examples might look like for the possible solutions to this auditor's report. And we would propose to put those examples in the concept release along with discussion as to the pros and cons and issues around that. So I think we can crystallize the issues to try to get at what types of standards do we have to put out there such that there can be reasonable consistency around the additional reporting that takes place, which I think is one of the concerns that some of the parties have. So I think the concept release is an important and necessary next step to get much deeper answers around much more explicit descriptions of what an auditor's supplemental report would look like.
Because you said standards should lead to greater care.
Yes, sir.
And I assume that includes guidance.
Yes.
If it's greater care, there would be guidance, and auditors would not be left to speculate as to what they're supposed to do in an AD&A. Would an AD&A require SEC separate rulemaking or SEC action other than what we normally do when we send a standard to the SEC?
I always turn to our general counsel when it comes to separate rulemaking, and so why don't I do that at this point?
Sure. As a general matter, as you know, the SEC is responsible for what types of disclosures issuers need to make and which of those disclosures in general require auditing or some other level of auditor association. The PCAOB, of course, is responsible for then how those audits or other engagements are carried out and reported on. Some of the things Marty's described today, such as a new report from the audit committee, obviously would require SEC action. Some of these other things are a little grayer and would have to be explored further as the details emerge. As a practical matter, certainly the SEC would be quite closely involved, and our staff would collaborate with their staff on any project of this sort, of course, because they have to prove any of our rule changes to begin with. So I think if there were some SEC action required, that'd be something we'd look more closely at as the project progressed.
I might just add to that that as this project has been progressing, we have been in constant and regular dialogue with the staff of the SEC, so they're well informed about these matters.
Of course, Section 10 Cap A of the Exchange Act requires that if an auditor finds fraud, the auditor must report up the line and must at the end of the, unless he receives a satisfactory response, must eventually decline the, must resign. You mentioned the fact that our rules require an auditor to look for fraud. Those rules all stay in effect. So you are pointing to, I take it, a system of disclosure that is addressed in part to the slippery slope that people found in some of the recent financial crisis and the reporting that came out of it. Is it your view, and would the concept release clarify the extent to which auditors reporting on or commenting on estimates or on the other aspects of your third area essentially have the ability to intervene earlier and to begin to sound the alarm if there is a trend or a material trend that is dangerous? Is it risk-based? Is that the direction of this?
There's a number of maybe two questions there, so let me try to take them both. The first, I think, deals with what the changes to the auditor's reporting model does and doesn't do, and the second one talks about risk, and let me touch on that. So, in essence, fundamentally in dealing with the changes in the auditor's report, we don't intend to change, at this point, other auditing standards. And so it's really taking the result of the completion of the audit and just changing what the auditor says about the audit in the audit report. It is viewed by many, particularly investors, that saying more than the financials simply present fairly will give them greater insight into what the auditor viewed as significant risks as part of that audit, risks of material misstatement in the financial statements, risks of significant measurement uncertainty. Clearly, many of the numbers that are in financial statements, the estimation processes, fair valuation processes, result in a range of possible outcomes, and management select a number which they think is, for one reason or another, the most reasonable. I think investors want to hear where on the scale of reasonableness did management's judgments and estimates come out. So it's that type of thing that this report would shed light on. It wouldn't create new auditing standards to do new work to dig into things further at this point. It would go to providing light on what the auditor already knows. The question of risk becomes an interesting one, though, because we have had many discussions with investors where the term risk is used, and I think we have to think about that word carefully. There is the general responsibility of the auditor to be concerned about the risk of material misstatement in the financial statements, whether due to error or fraud. And there's also other business risk, like will our product be successful? Is our business model sustainable in the long term? While the auditors have to have some knowledge of that for the purposes of their planning of their audit and thinking about how to do the audit, it isn't their responsibility today to evaluate business risk for purposes of reporting on those risks. So we want to be careful in the concept release that we're not setting different expectations. In some respect, that latter one would change the role of the auditor, which some are asking about as well. Should auditors do more about understanding risk in the company and the risk management processes? But I think that goes more towards the project, the role of the auditor, than the auditor's reporting model.
Those are very helpful distinctions, and this is an area that needs clarification, clarity, and distinctions. In turning it over to my colleagues, we're going to observe for no special reason today seniority, and we may follow a different order later, but at the present time, Mr. Gelser, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a statement and then also ask you a few questions. And I want to begin, as I think you've already made clear, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Bauman, by underscoring the importance of this project. Investors have been loud and clear in telling the board that they want more from the auditor than the traditional pass-fail report. For example, at the meeting of the board's investor advisory group last week, the board heard the results of an informal survey conducted by several of the IAG members, led by Professor Carcello, and they found that nearly half of respondents believed that the current audit report does not provide valuable information that is integral to understanding the financial statements. Almost one in five thought that the standard unqualified report was of no use to them at all. If these conclusions are representative of the views of financial statement users generally, they should be alarming to the audit profession and certainly a call to action for the board. I don't think that the traditional auditor's report should be abandoned, but I do agree that the board needs to look seriously at how it can enhance auditor communications with financial statement users. We will certainly not be alone in doing that. As has already been mentioned, several other groups, including IOSCO, the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board, and the European Commission, are already studying whether to expand the auditor's obligation to communicate information about the audit or about the financial statements. We may all agree that there's considerable hunger for more insight and information from the auditors. I believe, however, that there are some fundamental issues that still need to be resolved before we can fashion a new reporting model. In particular, I certainly have reservations about whether the auditor should become an independent source of information about the company's financial statements, including about the risks that are inherent in them and the judgments or decisions that went into preparing them. In my view, information of that type should, in the first instance, be management's responsibility. The auditor's core function should continue to be to attest to the accuracy and completeness of information management provides, not to provide a competing view of the company's financial reporting through the eyes of the auditor. This doesn't mean, however, that auditors should confine themselves to the conventional pass-fail opinion, or that they should not provide new forms of information to help users understand the financial statements. The auditor could, without supplanting management's role, provide information about what the auditor did in performing the audit. Discussion about the auditor's view of the significant audit risks, that is, the risks of material misstatement in the financial statements, and how the auditor addressed those risks might well provide users with fresh insight into issues surrounding the company's financial reporting. Risk, including the risk of fraud, is something that the auditor is already forced to think about in planning and performing the audit, requiring the auditor to tell users what it concluded and how it responded would dovetail with the risk assessment standards the board adopted last year. Auditors might also be required, this has been discussed, to make greater use of emphasis paragraphs in their opinions, or to indicate in other ways which of the things management has disclosed are, in the auditor's view, the most significant to understanding the company's financial reporting. In that vein, the French have adopted an approach under which the auditor provides justification for his or her opinion, but does so by referring to particular disclosures the company itself has made. In addition, I think there are ways that the scope of the audit could be expanded. Today, the auditor is responsible for expressing an opinion on the financial statements, including the disclosures and the notes, of course. However, as to accompanying financial information, such as that in the management's discussion and analysis, the auditor's current responsibilities are more limited. Requiring an auditor's opinion on the accuracy and completeness of MD&A might be a way of leveraging the attest function to provide investors with more assurance about management's assertions and management's with more incentive to fully comply with the MD&A. This idea could be extended to other information outside of the financial statements, such as an expanded risk disclosure-oriented audit committee report. So I'm looking forward to a concept release that will expose these ideas and others to discussion and debate. Along those lines, I want to end with a couple words about transparency and our standard-setting process. In the past, board public meetings on standard-setting matters have been limited to situations in which the board was voting on a proposed release or on a final standard. Critics have said that these limited public opportunities to hear board interaction with the staff and weren't adequate to permit a full understanding of the board's thinking and standard setting. This meeting, in which the staff is briefing the board on the results of its outreach and seeking guidance on whether and how to move to a concept release stage, is an effort to address those criticisms. I hope we'll make it routine to have discussions like this in public in the future. Before I turn to a couple of questions, I also want to recognize the hard work that has gone into the reporting model research and outreach and preparing for the discussion this morning. In addition to our chief auditor, Marty Bauman, the team includes Jennifer Rand, deputy chief auditor, who serves as the project leader, associate chief auditors Jessica Watts, Dan Mutzig, and assistant chief auditor Diane Jules. I know you've already put in many late nights and weekends on this project, and of course, as Jim indicated, the project is still just beginning. So thank you very much for all your effort. And the chairman's brought out some important points in his questions. Let me just touch on a couple of other things. I mean, first, as I already indicated, we heard what I thought was a fairly sobering presentation from the investor advisory group last week about investors' views of the utility of the current audit report. You've already commented about your outreach. I mean, just from a general perspective, do you feel that what we heard last week from the IAG was consistent with the results of your outreach? Were you surprised by any of it? Was there a disconnect?
No, there was really very consistent information that the IAG reported to the board a week ago or so, and the report that we were preparing to give to the board today. So I think the views that investors have that the current report just doesn't meet their needs, which has been expressed for, as we've all said, for many, many years, but just hasn't been dealt with, comes across loud in the IAG presentation and comes across loud and clear in what we heard in all of our investor outreach.
That certainly seems to be the case. I mean, of course, the IAG, by its nature, is, well, I guess one leg of a four-legged stool. You also heard from preparers, from auditors, and from audit committees. And Jennifer's outlined kind of the differences in views between the various groups. And I just, I know how much time and effort is going into these outreach meetings. I think they've been taking place since, last fall?
Yeah, since about October.
Perhaps. Do you think that's a model that we might use in other kinds of standard setting? I mean, it's certainly given us a running start on the concept release and perhaps on a proposal. On the other hand, it's obviously a lot of work for the staff. Are there other projects that might lend themselves to the same thing?
I think there are. Well, I think to your general point that you've made earlier, that we continue to try to increase the transparency of our standard setting, and more outreach and the more input we get as part of that does that. So the general answer is I think it's valuable to make sure that we're getting as much good input as we can. We have noted, for instance, when we issue a proposed standard, most of our responses we get back tend to be from accounting associations or the audit profession. This type of outreach, roundtables, et cetera, enables us to get broader participation and views of investors whom we serve in trying to prepare informative, accurate, and reliable audit reports. So not every project will have this same type of outreach, but I think conducting this kind of outreach is very helpful to getting a good understanding as we move forward of the needs.
Well, thanks for that. I may certainly agree. Let me switch to something that you and the chairman spoke about. I think I'm still not really quite clear on what the answer is. If we adopt a rule that requires the auditor to provide some additional sort of report, discuss your views of, I don't know, management's estimates, the management's selection of accounting principles, judgments that have gone into the financial statements, can that be the end of the process, or would we also need to develop an auditing standard that told the auditor what type of work they needed to do in order to support the statements in that report? And is this both a disclosure requirement and an auditing standard setting project that we're at least potentially about to embark on here, or can we simply limit ourselves to the direction to disclose or give your views of information you presumably already learned in the course of conducting the audit?
Well, I'll start on this, and certainly Jennifer, and I think since you're talking about rules again, we'll probably wind up with OGC commenting also. But
I'm not asking so much from a legal standpoint. It's just given the nature of what auditing is, can auditors be asked to make additional disclosures without creating a framework underlying that for what work they have to do in order to provide those disclosures?
But I think that's a very good point. The auditors, there has to be a framework underneath it. I mean, some of the words that you hear from either the IAG group or our outreach is things that, you know, investors want to hear more about risks. But we'll need to talk about what risks we believe our standards indicate auditors are appropriate for them to address as part of their audits. In some cases, you know, investors have asked to hear about whether the financial statements are conservative or aggressive. Well, those are terms that are not necessarily defined in GAAP, first of all, not necessarily defined in our literature. And in some cases, it can be as bad for a set of financial statements to be conservative. Some might feel that that's building up a bunch of cookie jar reserves and not necessarily a positive thing. So we don't want auditors to go out and just start using words about, I think these financials are conservative, they're aggressive, their policies are this or that. So I think we have to certainly make sure that it's embedded in the auditing standards, first of all, what the auditor has to do, and therefore what the auditor can report on has a foundation on that, as opposed to simply expressing views that are not tied at all to auditing standards or procedures that we have in place. Does that help at all?
Yeah, it does help, and it's certainly not something that I've thought all the way through, and I hope we'll learn something about it in response to the
I don't think I've thought it all the way through either.
But it does seem to me that we maybe perhaps have two challenges here in defining what else we want from the auditors is just the first one, and then creating that framework or that set of requirements for what that means and how they produce and support that information is the second. But we'll see where we go. It may be a related question. I mean, the chairman made some comments about boilerplate. I guess that's a derogative term. But I also kind of wondered how we would prevent what I'll call an auditor free writing exercise from deteriorating, if that isn't too judgmental, deteriorating into boilerplate. I wonder if the firms wouldn't have a strong incentive to create a series of standardized statements and then pick the one that they thought fit for each particular client, rather than actually letting the engagement partner or even somebody in the national office create sort of a free writing one-off statement about each particular audit client's judgments. And maybe that wouldn't be bad. I think that's what the Cohn Commission had in mind, that there would be a series of standardized explanations that the auditor could.
That was a recommendation of the Cohen Commission, that there could be standardized alternative expressions that could be made by the auditor about the financial statements. I think your question is a good one, and it's part of what we have to explore in both the concept release and then ultimately the proposed standard itself. There are probably pros and cons. The thought of a lot of simply freelance reports by a group of auditors in a large firm who didn't share consistent views could have the potential for negative market outcomes if they didn't express them in a consistent basis. On the other hand, simply turning to a purely boilerplate report, I don't think would wind up meeting the needs of investors at the end of the day either. So I don't think we have answers for all of this yet, but these are the challenges we have to address as part of this project.
I'm a little different topic. I just wonder if you could expand a little or if you have additional ideas at this point about how we would go about, I'll say, requiring the use of emphasis paragraphs in certain situations and what situations those might fit for. Again, whether that would be a sort of a standardized statement or something else. It's kind of an intriguing idea. I guess intriguing because everybody's heard of emphasis paragraphs, but I think very few people have ever seen one currently. And I'm not sure I quite comprehend what the situations are in which we might bring them into play.
Well, you can pick up a set of financial statements today for some of the large financial institutions, and the financial statements will be well over 100 pages, or even, I think, some of the auto industry, if you pick up a set of financial statements, it could be around 100 pages. A lot of information in there, and, of course, while it's all required by GAAP, maybe different portions of it are far more important to understanding certain critical aspects about that company. Certain mandated types of areas where we'd suggest that auditors have to bring things to the attention of investors could include material uncertainties that might be somewhere buried in those 100 pages of financial statements, that whether it's litigation or some other type of uncertainty. As we've talked about before in the presentation, much of financial reporting has significant measurement uncertainty around it, and pointing the investors to those areas where there are greatest measurement uncertainty or the use of unobservable inputs and, about those unobservable inputs would be kind of additional areas as well. And again, as we've discussed, those areas that have the greatest degree of estimation and variability. So I think there's a number of areas where it's critically important to understand that the financial statements don't represent this single penny earnings per share that everybody thinks they do, but there's a lot of uncertainty and variability around it that would help an investor better assess the value of that investment and potential variables of it. So I don't think we have a crisp single list yet, but I think we could probably come to one.
There's so much that could be asked about here. I'll limit myself to one more question in one more area. I mean, I think everyone who's spoken so far this morning has referred to the similar projects that are underway by other bodies. I think the IAASB, I guess, is about to come out with something. The EC's green paper touches on this. The FRC, IASCO. Jim made, you know, what I thought was a very, you know, persuasive fundamental statement about the uniqueness of our markets and broad investor participation in our markets. Do you have concerns about differing reporting models emerging that would be mandatory under different auditing regimes? I mean, I guess on the one hand, kind of going into this, it seemed to me it would be very awkward if an auditor in Europe, for example, had to provide one kind of an ADA, and an auditor in the United States had to prepare another kind of an ADA, particularly given the, you know, the multinational nature of so many audit clients today. On the other hand, the point about our markets being different and the level of investor participation, our markets being different, is very valid. We haven't accepted the idea that we should change our auditing standards to conform to the ISAs and have one worldwide set of auditing standards. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts would be about whether we're better off with one worldwide supplemental reporting model or whether perhaps we need one that's unique to the United States and we really care what the rest of the world does in this regard.
Jennifer, do you want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, I'll take that. We have been, as you mentioned, and as I had mentioned earlier, too, just monitoring carefully what other groups are doing, like the IAASB, European Commission, FRC, IASCO. Where those groups are today are at a similar phase where we are, I would say. They haven't come across with any specific recommendations in areas. They've been some have gone ahead and issued questions or consultation paper, like the European Commission's green paper. Others have yet to do so, such as the IAASB has yet to issue anything. And IASCO issued a paper a couple of years ago, but I think they're monitoring developments of others, which, you know, many other groups such as ours are moving forward. You talked about, Dan, differences in reporting, and there's differences in reporting that exist today. There's differences in auditing standards that exist today. And as we've, in our standard setting, as we've come up with new standards such as risk assessment, we've continued to monitor what others are doing, but there's areas where we find it makes sense for us to be different. So I think with the auditor's report and the different unique environment that the United States is in compared to other countries around the globe, we will have those same considerations as we consider what's best for companies, for investors of U.S. public companies. So with that said, we will be monitoring what others are doing. We have seen the French report that does have a different type of report today that's been in existence for 5 or so years, which highlights certain areas of significance in the auditor's view and refers back to the financial statement. Some have called that kind of an expanded type of emphasis of matter type of reporting. That is a different type of model, and from our understanding, that model has been working. So I think, you know, differences can exist. They do exist today, given different markets. But we will certainly continue to monitor what others are doing. And there may be needs for us to communicate further with certain regulators as we all move forward along and analyzing this issue.
Well, and I think every standard-setting project we put out, we hear from commenters about the similarities and differences between what we're proposing and the ISAs. And I suspect as all these projects unfold, consistency or lack thereof in this area will also be something to be very, very interesting to the profession.
As Jennifer said, we are trying to stay as close as possible to those other projects right now. But at the end of the day, I think we'll be recommending what we think is best for U.S. investors.
Well, again, thanks for all your work on this. I do think that for both the investors and for the profession, this is perhaps the most important project we're currently working on, or maybe even likely to work on at least in the next year or so. So thank you.
Mr. Harris.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I commend you and before that, Acting Chairman Geltzer, for taking on this issue of modernizing the auditor's report and support the timeline that you have laid out and that has been posted on our website. Our mandate, as Marty Bauman pointed out from the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, is, quote, to protect the interest of investors in the preparation of, among other listed items, informative audit reports. And I believe this project is an important step to the board's fulfilling that directive. As was referenced earlier, last Wednesday at our PCOB Investor Advisory Group meeting, Professor Joe Carcello made what I thought was a compelling presentation for improving the auditor's report. Fellow advisory group members included Gus Sauter of Vanguard, Norman Harrison of Breeden Capital, and Yerger of the Council of Institutional Investors, who all joined Professor Carcello in making this presentation. Also participating in the research and preparation of the presentation were Brandon Becker of TIA Cref, Michael Head of TD Ameritrade, Bonnie Hill of Icon Blue, Pete Nactway of Legg Mason, Ann Simpson of CalPERS, and Eric Vincent of Osprey. As part of their research, the group surveyed 300 leaders from investment banks, hedge funds, private equity funds, mutual funds, endowments, and pension funds on the usefulness of the current auditor's report and suggestions for improvements that might better serve investors' needs. Responses to this survey represented well over $8 trillion under management. Some of the major points I took away from that presentation, and Marty and Jennifer have referenced a number of them, including the following. Most investors responding to the survey believe the current auditor's report does not provide valuable information that is integral to understanding the financial statements. Investors want auditors to discuss their assessment of management's estimates and judgments and how the auditors arrive at that assessment. And the majority of investors would also like more information regarding areas of high financial statement and audit risk, unusual transactions, the quality of an issuer's accounting practices and policies. During the discussion that followed, I was struck by Ann Simpson of CalPERS' graphic depiction of the auditor's report for 2008, 2009, and 2010 for one of the many companies that were recipients of TARP funds. As she held up copies of each year's report of that issue for the people around the table to see, she described the reports as, quote, word for word, exactly the same, with the 2008 report costing $119 million, the 2009 report costing $193 million. She went on to say, quote, I think this example really gives a sense of the urgency of tackling this issue, close quote. Investor representatives point to the TARP recipients and a significant sampling of failed financial institutions during the financial crisis, where investors lost hundreds of billions of dollars and wonder why virtually every one of them received unqualified opinions. And they ask, why shouldn't auditors disclose to investors the same significant risks they disclose to audit committees? And why shouldn't this information be disclosed to them directly as opposed to funneled through management and audit committees? And they ask whether auditors understand that under the law, they, as opposed to management or audit committees, are the auditor's primary stakeholders. As you pointed out, Mr. Chairman, questions about the usefulness of the auditor's report have been around for decades. And Marty, you stole my quote from Emanuel Cohen, so I will not repeat it. But
sorry.
As far back as 1978, Emanuel Cohen, the former legendary chairman of the SEC, was making essentially the same point as Ann Simpson made last week. Indeed, in a 2006 report, the CEOs of the largest six audit firms acknowledged that, quote, users of financial information may demand to receive more finely nuanced opinions from auditors about the degree of a company's compliance with a given set of standards or the relative conservatism of judgments compared to peer groups, close quote. And the CEOs went on to say, quote, investors even may want the auditor's views about the overall health and future prospects of the companies they audit. So even leaders of the profession foresaw the likely need and demand of investors for more information. And more recently, in 2008, the Treasury Department's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession urged the PCAOB to, quote, undertake a standard-setting initiative to consider improvements to the auditor's standing reporting model. As has been pointed out, dissatisfaction with the current auditor's reporting model is not limited to the United States. The European Union has released a green paper calling for improvements in communication between auditors and investors, and the UK's Financial Reporting Council has issued new reporting proposals, quote, so that annual reports, including audited financial information, deliver greater value to investors and serve the public interest better. As Mr. Barnier and leaders of the profession have each acknowledged, the status quo is not an option. Once again, I want to commend you, Chairman Doty, former Chairman Geltzer, the board, and Marty and his team for making this issue a priority for the board and for an approach that includes a comprehensive outreach to solicit input from a wide variety of interested parties, including investors, issuers, audit committees, and auditors. And as I mentioned at the outset, I support and look forward to meeting the timeline that has been laid out for our consideration of this issue. And I join you and all the other board members in complimenting the efforts of our Chief Auditor, Marty Bauman, Jennifer Rand, Dan Mutzig, Jessica Watts, and Deanne Jules, from Marty's staff, and Bob Burns and Nina Majuri-Azad from the General Counsel's Office, who I know have been working on this and will continue to work on it. Let me start with one of the questions that the auditors are raising. And that is, what has been the reaction of issuers and management to why shouldn't auditors disclose to investors the same significant risks they disclose to audit committees?
In general, response of management and audit committees would be that that takes place in a two-way dialogue with a fairly extensive exchange of information. So a greater foundation about what the issues are that are being discussed, such that they have the right context for it. Their concern is just taking that information, for instance, and laying it out coldly may be misunderstood by the markets and may have adverse consequences, one, and two, that their general view that if there's information to be reported, it should be reported by management or the audit committee. So those would be the responses of audit committee members or managements to that.
I think that one of the comments that you made was that investors represent the customers of the auditors. And I think Jim Croker, the SEC chief accountant, recently made a similar remark at the December 2011 AICPA annual conference on SEC and PCAOB developments. So my question is, who do you think auditors view as their primary customers? Management, audit committees, or investors, and in what order?
Well, I'll tell you the view of investors on this. Investors' view on this clearly is that they have not been viewed as a customer, that they believe that auditors have traditionally viewed management as their customer, and maybe in more recent post-Sarbanes-Oxley years, they've begun to view the audit committee as their customer, but certainly investors have no indication that they have been viewed as a customer. So that would be their response to that question.
No, but I think the more direct question is, who do auditors view as their primary stakeholders based upon your outreach?
Yeah, I don't know that we specifically asked that question of auditors. Jennifer, did we?
We did not specifically get, you know, we did not get into a detailed discussion with them on that specific topic. But certainly investors feel that by modifying the auditor's report to include more information that would be useful to investors, all the type of things for change that we've been hearing, would help change the auditor's focus. They do have a perception that the investors are not the auditor's customer, and they do think that moving changes in that direction would help right-size that so that auditors do think of investors as their customer.
What's your sense? Because I get the feeling that the profession would very much like to funnel a lot of what investors would like to receive through management and the audit committee. Is that a correct assumption, or is that?
I think auditors have said that they believe that information about the financial statements should come from the preparers or from the audit committee, and that if there's greater information that is desired by investors about the audit, and that should come from the auditors. I don't think investors, our conversations with auditors were pretty extensive, and I think they are prepared to talk to investors in a greater degree about the audit risk they've identified and their response to audit risk. They also talked about expanding the auditor's role, such that the auditor would provide assurance on MD&A or portions of MD&A, which would likely improve the quality of MD&A, thus giving investors greater information about what they want. So I have seen responsiveness here from the audit profession to look to ways to try to get to some solutions to try to help investors in this regard, although their general overall viewpoint is when it comes to discussing the financial statements themselves and views about the financials, they believe that that's a requirement that should come from FASB and or the SEC for enhanced discussion of the financial statements by management and or the audit committee.
Is there any lowest common denominator yet that you have whereby there be consensus on any issue with respect to what additional changes ought to be made in the audit report?
Well, there are just different views from the different constituents. Clearly, the views from the investors, investors, although many of them want this auditor's discussion and analysis, many other investors who we have a great deal of respect for and in our conversations and dug into this also felt that a step forward of pointing we, the investors, to the most significant risks in the financial statements, the greatest variables in the financial statements, some of the things we talked about before in the matters of emphasis, felt that that would be an important step forward if we didn't get to an AD&A sort of disclosure. So investors have maybe want something up here, but understand that potentially maybe there's reasons they can get something that would help them and not achieve 100% of their needs, if that's what you mean by lowest common denominator. I think when it comes to all parties agreeing on something, all parties agree that the standard auditor's report could be improved, the language in that could be clarified, and I think all parties agree that there could be improved disclosures to investors about the variability in financial statements and measurement uncertainty. The issue comes as to who should present that and then who should attest to it.
And then I just have two more questions. Well, I got a lot more questions, but only two that I'll ask. Warren Buffett has said that as an audit committee member, he would ask, what is it that the auditors know that if they were investing in this company, they as investors would want to know and have out there publicly? From your research efforts, can you comment on whether others feel that this concept extends beyond audit committees to include investors?
I think this is the fundamental concept that investors are looking for. They're looking for investors, for the auditors to give them the information that investors feel they really need to make an informed decision. As they wade through 100 pages of financial statements, what is the information that would be most valuable to that auditor if he was making, or he or she were making, an investment decision? What should I know as the investor as the most important piece of information? I think it's very similar. That's the message we by and large heard from investors.
And then the final question I have relates to cost. The recommendations from the investor advisory group were clear in that according to the results of their survey, one of the most desired changes included an auditor's discussion of its assessment of estimates and judgments made by management. Investors would also like to know how the auditor arrived at that assessment. When asked, the advisory group members felt that the cost of this additional information would be minimal, because investors are not asking the auditors to do any more work other than to describe their findings in a report to investors. What are your thoughts about the potential costs involved with reporting this kind of information?
Well, it would be a new type of report, first of all, and I think that would require some additional work to construct a new report. As we discussed before with Dan Gelser's questions, we'd be developing some rules and some standards around that report. Importantly, though, I think for a firm, what auditors would say with a firm of 1,500 public companies and several hundred partners, there'd be a great concern on their part of partners going off and writing freelance reports on their own about their views of financial statements without developing some sort of consistency within the firm as to how they thought about these different issues. So they'd have to build some sort of quality control mechanisms within the firm to review these reports. Just like MD&A takes a fair amount of time, even though management has the underlying financial information, it takes a lot of time for to write an MD&A, to review it, have counsel review it to ensure that investors are getting a good product. I think auditors would say we'd want to go through that same effort as well. So I think the cost is probably greater than was laid out at the IAG meeting.
I think I must be missing something, because in essence I think what investors are asking for is that investors get the same risk disclosures that the audit committee gets in management. And if that's the case, I'm not sure where the added cost would come from. But I've more than used my time. I just wanted to make that editorial comment.
Actually, both you and Dan Gelser have been very economical, and I should say that the respect which the new board members have for the efforts that Dan Gelser and Steve Harris and others have expended in getting us this far, while we were all three looking at the board from the outside, is evidenced by the comment you've heard today. So the new board members are bursting with questions. And Mr. Ferguson, do you want to lead off?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a very brief statement. First of all, let me join with you in thanking Steve Harris and Dan Gelser and the staff for getting this project as far as it is before we ever got here. It's a remarkable and admirable effort. For at least 40 years, though, the phrase expectation gap has been used to describe the difference between the levels of expected performance as envisioned by the auditor and by the users of financial statements. And in those 40 years, there have been a number of commissions that have looked at the role of the auditor, including the Cohen Commission and the Treadway Commission in the 1970s and 1980s. Those commissions led to a change in the audit report that added the scope paragraph to define the respective responsibilities of management and the independent auditor, to describe the work performed by the auditor and the limits of the auditor. The changes, however, did not eliminate the use of the perceived expectations gap. The expectations gap was just as strong after those changes as it was before. So as a result, at least part as a result of that, the Treasury Department's Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession, the ACAP profession, recommended that the PCAOB undertake a standard-setting initiative to consider changes to the auditor standard reporting model. So that because the standard wording does not adequately reflect the amount of the auditor work and judgment. I'm delighted that you've undertaken a project to consider improvements to the audit reports. Business operations, particularly those of the largest global enterprises, grow ever more complex. Our financial markets spawn new investment vehicles at dizzying speed, many of which rely on assumptions, judgments, and estimates about valuations and future events. The SEC, in its management discussion and analysis rules, has actually taken into account these changes, and the issuer's financial statements have evolved over time to include disclosures about these items. But the auditor's report has stayed the same, even though presumably, in order to audit these financial statements, the auditor's work has had to evolve just along with management's work in preparing its financial statements. The current auditor's report gives only a limited hint about the amount of work and effort that auditors put into auditing an issuer's financial statements and related disclosures, and the issues that the auditor found to be significant and that concerned him. And although the pass-fail auditor's report is uniform, concise, and to the point, and provides admirable comparability with other audit reports, with rare exceptions, it provides investors and other users of financial statements with little information beyond the auditor's final opinion. And investors believe that the auditors have a great deal of knowledge about the areas of risk in the company. They have views about the variability and estimates that management makes, but that information never gets to investors. May get to the audit committee, may get to management, never gets to the investors. And the auditor's report is the vehicle that auditors use to let investors know whether the company's financial statements present fairly the financial position of the company. And typically, and I think this is important, the auditor's report is addressed to the board of directors and the shareholders, or said another way, to the owners of the company or their representatives, those who have capital at risk. By its definition, it seems to me, the auditor is saying that his client is the investor. Now, the goal, one of the things I'd like to stress here is that the goal of this project is not to either fundamentally change the role of the auditor or to increase the number or type of audit procedures the auditor performs during an audit. Presumably, the auditors are already evaluating issues such as audit risk, management estimates, judgments, and fair market value estimations before they express their opinion. The goal of our exercise is to determine what type of information investors feel they need from an independent party as they are making their investment decisions, and whether the auditor or someone else can reasonably be expected to provide that information. Investors, I believe I heard from the investor advisory group, want an independent view of the kinds of things that management is saying in its financial statements. The information investors are seeking is already available to the auditor, and the goal is to determine what information should be provided to the investor. It's obvious to me that although the auditor's report has changed in the last several decades, the changes have not addressed the investor's perceived needs and have not materially reduced the so-called expectations gap. As standard setters, I think we need to be ever mindful of the needs of investors. I believe this project is a step in the right direction, and I applaud the Office of the Chief Auditor for conducting such an extensive outreach to investors, preparers, and audit committees, and I look forward to the issuance of concept reliefs and the staff's recommendations on how to address the investors' concerns. Finally, I'd like to thank the many PCAOB staff members for working on this project. Marty Bauman, Jennifer Rand, Dan Mutzig, Jessica Watts, Deanne Jules, Nina Mojiri-Azad, and Bob Burns. Without their hard work and creativity, we wouldn't be here today discussing the potential improvements to the auditor's reports. I'd also like to thank the many investors, preparers, auditors, and audit committee members who took time to meet with the staff and provide their views on how potentially to improve the auditor's reports. And I have just a few questions that I'd like to ask. As I listened to the information that was coming in from investors, audit committee members, preparers, and auditors, there seemed to me some fairly fundamental contradictions between what people were saying. Do you believe that there are aspects of that there are irreconcilabilities in these stances, that there are things that either we will have to choose between the views of one of these groups or another? Or is it possible that we could come up with a set of standards that actually will solve the needs of investors without being irreconcilable with what the other groups want and feel is appropriate?
Very good and a very difficult question. Certainly at one end of the extreme in terms of what investors want at this point in time, that would be a very different view than what preparers and audit committees and auditors believe they can give them. At some other level in terms of what investors said would be a big step forward is a lot closer to where parties might be able to get on a common ground. I think laying it out in a concept release with a couple of different structures in mind and looking for comments, I think will help that process. And I do believe the various parties in this financial reporting supply chain, auditors, preparers, as well, and audit committees, understand that there's great dissatisfaction with the product by investors and that something has to be done to change here. I think, as Board Member Steve Harris said, And many have noted, the status quo is not an option. So it's a matter of reaching compromise on this issue, I think, is going to be very important.
Another area I have concern about or questions about is that some of the things that are proposed here, I think, would require action by either the Securities Exchange Commission or the Financial Accounting Standards Board. Is there any reason in your judgment that we cannot go ahead with our own proposals in this area and our own standards in this area, frankly, or that we must wait for action by these other bodies?
Well, I'll start. Again, I'll probably turn to Gordon at the end, but Certainly, I think with respect to some of the changes we'd like to make in the report, requiring auditors to disclose other things resulting from the audit, I believe, based on what I've heard and discussions I've had with GC, that we could propose those kind of changes on our own. There are some changes, though, that might be worthwhile to accomplish, depending upon the direction we finally went, might be beneficial to do a couple of things at the same time, such as certain improvements in the existing auditor's report, but also extending auditor's responsibilities to certain things as MD&A, as a complement to that, or portions of MD&A, which would enhance the quality of MD&A, presumably if they were reporting on it, which may require SEC action as well. So I think depending upon the route we go, some pieces we could do by ourselves, some which might be a combined good solution might require action by us and others. Would you like to comment further, Gordon and or Bob?
Just to agree with what you said, and just to clarify based on what I said before, that I think we have to be cautious of reaching conclusions, again, because we're talking about a variety of different things at this stage in this project, but certainly we do have standards today that speak to what auditors report on, and it certainly is within our mandate to expand on those things. So there are a range of things here that could be done that would be purely within the board's ability. But I think in general, once this project progresses further, once the concept release has been issued and we're more specific about what needs to be done, we'll be able to make better determinations about exactly whether it's something we can do ourselves or if there has to be some action by either, as you said, FASB or the SEC.
Thank you. And a final question. I, along with Dan Gelzer here, am terribly fearful of boilerplate and of whatever we do being degenerating into formulas that actually obscure rather than convey information. Have you thought through that issue, and have you thought how we're likely to try to deal with that? I mean, I know we talked about various alternatives, the alternative reporting mechanisms or alternative ways of phrasing things that could become formulated. Do you think that if you did something like that, that could would give meaningful information rather than degenerating into boilerplate, or do we need to go further?
Well, your concerns are completely valid, and it's one of the biggest concerns we have as well, that the reports could somehow turn to boilerplate. Even Steve Harris mentioned a moment ago, we'll just give the audit committee the report that the auditors give to the audit committee. Well, there's some fear that that report to the audit committee would turn to be a listing of statements of here's what we did, without any discussion of that's now in that audit committee report about what the auditors really found. And so if you did that, that might just be a boilerplate audit committee report given to investors. So that's one of the great fears of this project, is going down a route where the outcome is some kind of boilerplate reporting. And that's, we do want to avoid that. I mean, we're trying to make a real change here in improving the quality of what is being and auditors do a very thorough job under our standards to do an audit. And we want to get that report on that audit improved so that there's greater quality to the investors. So we'll be working vigorously to ensure that, try to ensure that doesn't happen.
Because the history of prior efforts to do this has not been good. It's not encouraging.
That's correct.
We need to be very, very aware of that if we want to do something.
It's a key point.
Chairman?
No, last but far from least, the auditor on the board. New auditor on the board, Jay Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I now understand my spot in the pecking order. I guess I'm the least senior of the members. In my prepared statement, I raised many of the same comments that the other board members have raised, so I'm not going to read the entire thing, and I will echo the thanks without calling them out specifically for all the hard work that's been done. But I'm going to comment on a couple perspectives that I thought of as I'm pondering this issue. And as I was thinking about this, I was reminded of my days in school when the teacher would assign the class to do a book report. And I remember that I really liked to read. I really did not like to write about what I had read. And I think about my kids and the challenges when they were assigned a book report and had to be a certain number of words long, and they would sit and count the words time and time again to get it up to the exact number that they needed to have. And thinking about if they were assigned to write a book report on a short story, that would be one level of challenge. If they were assigned to write a book report on Moby Dick, that would be an entirely different level of challenge for them. And I'm also thinking about how many different interpretations that the school teachers over the years have gotten on books like Moby Dick and how much they maybe smiled and smirked and wondered how creative of an interpretation that was. And so as I think about this, so I'm thinking in many respects a financial statement, an annual report, is like a book report on the company's results of the operations for the year. There are many thousands or even millions of transactions that get summarized down into just one line item in the financial statement. The footnotes describe the accounting principles and a few of the details behind it. MD&A goes through the explanation of the numbers and the trends. And the auditor's report has historically just had the simple pass-fail statement on whether the financial statements present fairly, and that is distilling it down from the hundreds of pages. And so I kind of think of this as the investors are telling us, and we're hearing the message loud and clear, that effectively they want a further executive summary or book report on the book report with a further discussion of how good are the numbers. And so that's kind of what's shaping my thought process on this, and we have a difficult task ahead of us. And one of the fundamental questions that we've talked about here a lot has been what is the fundamental role of an auditor? At the IAG meeting last week, it was just very clear that there's a big difference between what auditors think and what investors think. And having spent the last 32 years as an auditor, I think I know what auditors generally understand the role to be, which is express an opinion on the financial statements, just in the simple pass-fail statement as we're talking about. But it's just very clear that there's a big difference between what auditors think their role is and what at least some investors think their role is. So I think personally, I think we need to break this issue down into the auditor's report, separate from that broader question of what the auditor's role is. I'm trying to approach this on the basis of practically what can we get done in the near term. And I think about this, and one of the questions that Marty was asked earlier from Dan is at the heart of the issue, that I think this is just a communications exercise. This isn't about auditing or accounting. It's about telling the world what the auditor knows. And so that's going to be a bit of a challenge, and I think the board is really going to be faced with a difficult task of using our collective professional judgment to decide between the competing things that we're hearing from different constituencies, what we put out for a standard that will be clear so that the auditors can follow it, establish a framework that promotes consistency, and it's that fine line between boilerplate and consistency, all against that backdrop of being timely and cost-effective. And there's another thing I want to bring up, though, and that is oftentimes regulators like us tend to regulate in a vacuum, and there are many other things going on in the world that are so extremely challenging for companies today. And one of the things I want to bring up is the things going on at the Financial Accounting Standards Board. The accounting standards are continually in a state of flux, and there are some enormous projects that the FASB and International Accounting Standards Board are taking on as what are collectively referred to as convergence projects, which will fundamentally change the accounting and accounting systems and thought process to arrive at numbers even as basic as the single biggest number in most entities' financial statements, revenue. And the task for preparers and auditors to get ready for that challenge of these new standards coming down the road, and the effective dates have not been set, they haven't even been issued yet, but I've heard some people suggest that the effort in that will be more than what it took companies to adopt Section 404 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. So we have to be mindful of the enormous burden being placed on the preparers and the auditors relative to these new standards. And overriding all this is still the looming question about whether or if the SEC will mandate IFRS in its entirety for companies in the United States. So I think we need to be mindful of the increasing complexity that all companies are facing as we weigh these options. So as we ask ourselves if we're going to set some standards that ultimately require the auditor to prepare a further book report on the company's financial statements, will the auditor's interpretations be as diverse as the school teachers have seen about Moby Dick, and will investors truly find this useful? So, Marty, I'm just going to distill this down to one question, because many of the questions that all the board members have been covered in a variety of fashions, but just a question. Do you know if anybody's actually tried to do an exercise of writing an auditor's discussion and analysis on a company's financial statements? That's going to be the proof in the pudding. Can somebody actually do it in a way that the investors find meaningful?
I'm not aware of any previous exercise where auditors have been asked to do this, other than, as I think you're aware, in private transactions, as referred to earlier, when an investor engages an auditor in a private transaction to examine the financial statements of the target, an auditor will express a view on those financial statements of whether they present fairly and then go into substantial detail about the accounting policies and judgments and estimates and the range of reserves, et cetera, that's been done. So there is a form of long-form reporting that's been around for some time in private transactions where auditors analyze and discuss the financial statements. So that's probably the one form that I think we're both familiar with that's taken place over the years in private transactions. And you know, to some extent, that's what we've heard from investors, that, you know, we're making an investment decision no different than in a private transaction, and we're asking for some of the same information that would be in that long-form report. And so, you know, why can't we get that? So that's where they're coming from.
And my personal observation would be it'd be interesting through this process to essentially challenge an investor group, an auditor, audit committee, and management to come up with an example of what would be useful to the investors, working collaboratively to figure it out so that we all had a good idea of exactly what we're looking at and maybe get a sense of what the cost element is. And I know it's going to be a challenge to do, but it's something that I think voluntarily asking someone to actually let's take a look at what this would look at and look like. And just a final observation before I stop, this question about what it's going to take to actually do this. As I think about it, Marty, if you were writing an email to Jennifer, you would put one level of review into that note. If you were writing a message to the entire team, you'd maybe put a different level into that. If you're writing a message to the board, you'd probably look at it a fair number of times and maybe ask Jennifer to reread it before you push the button. If you're writing it for the entire universe to see, there would be an enormous amount of effort that would go into making sure that the words conveyed all the things that you meant and did not convey the things you did not mean, and have a very robust review process around it. And so personally, I think that's where the review time or the additional cost will come in, is in that in that process of making sure that the words truly convey in a clear fashion to the investors and to the world what the auditor meant. And that's not a no-cost exercise, since that will be the most senior individuals on the engagement and in the firms doing that. Hard to assign that to a first-year staff accountant.
That was the point I was making earlier, that, again, if investors believe this is going to be very important to their investment decisions, we would hope that auditors take a very careful time in choosing the words carefully and thoughtfully about those financial statements so that appropriate investment decisions can be made. We don't want any adverse consequences out of some standard-setting project we embark upon. So I agree with that point fully. Also, the point you're making about getting parties to work on this beforehand, I don't want to commit to any field testing or things like that, but I do hope that we have the opportunity to work with, at a minimum, the audit profession and maybe some others to look at a set of financial statements and look at what a possible report that we're coming up with might look like before we go out and start suggesting that here's what we propose auditors start doing. So we will be constructing or trying to construct ways of how that would look in a real situation.
Good. Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Are there any brief closing comments by board members? Anything that?
Well, one thing that strikes me, I'd welcome a book report, and it can be a three-word book report. One is risk, and the other one is no risk. Right now, it seems to me that we got an audit opinion which essentially says no risk. All I'm looking for is there a risk and some explanation for it? So I think the book report can be simple. But having said that, if in fact there's risk, I think some of the risk ought to be defined. So I would like to see the book report as well. But right now we've got clean book reports, from my perspective, all across the board, and that is there's no risk. And so I'd like to I'm glad we're addressing this issue, but I also agree with the analogy that we need a book report.
I think what you've heard today is a consensus by board members that there are a lot of complexities to the issue, that there's a lot to understand, and there is a great deal to think about. I would say that I think we talk a great deal in the building here about skepticism, professional skepticism. The SEC is an institution, I think it could fairly be said, whose professional skepticism is directed to the financial markets and the gatekeepers of the financial markets. Here, we have to be skeptical. Our professional skepticism has to be a skepticism, I think, that without a strong audit standard and a strong duty of care and a strong sense of clarity in what auditors do, we have to be skeptical of whether management and financial preparers will provide the information voluntarily or will be willing to acknowledge the significance of the information. What you've heard today, I think, centers around the complexities, the moving parts, the details that are the bedeviling issue that has detained and prevented change in this area for 30 years. And those kinds of details have to be addressed and dealt with by us. But at the end of the day, we help auditors. If we remain skeptical of whether management will give this information and make these financial statements clear on their own motion, and whether by giving auditors standards, clear standards, and clear guidance, we don't increase the transparency of financial reporting. We think we will. We think we have to. And I think based on the discussion, including all of these questions of board members, it's appropriate to direct the staff to develop a written concept release on possible changes to the auditor's reporting model for the board's consideration at a future public meeting. With our gratitude, you have also the green light. Please go ahead and do so. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
We are going to clear the room, I think, and then reassemble here. We have some matters to conduct as a non-public board. But thanks to the public for coming. Thanks to you all for attending and to participants on the webcast.